OPN Ask an Angel podcasts are conversations with global angel investors and venture capitalists. We explore how to invest, understanding investment strategies and approaches to due diligence. Join us and learn what it takes to be a startup or what it takes to invest in the next great company. Welcome to the Supporters Fund Ask an Investor. I'm your host, Jeffrey Poffin, and let's please welcome Nicole Denholder, founder of Next Chapter Raise, as our investor for today. Welcome, Nicole. It's a real pleasure having you join us today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on. Looking forward to chatting with you.
No, likewise. I'm pretty excited because I know we've chatted a few times and we've gone into many different tangents. So there's some really good things that we're going to dive in today. And I think today too is going to be exciting because we're taking a different approach when we're going to this interview today, is because we want to look at something a little bit different and also kind of alter the way we were kind of attacking the market with our podcast. So I'm pretty excited about the little changes that we're making, and glad that it's going to be with yourself today. So to kick things off, let's jump into everything about you. You can jump in and share a little bit about kind of your background, where you came from the Canterbury Times all the way through PwC to Sophia, on the schooling side. And then the last thing is one thing about you that nobody would know.
So fantastic. Okay, well, I'm an Australian living in Hong Kong. I've been here 20 years, and prior to that I was in Europe for 6 or 7 years, so it all sounds quite scary as it adds up. And so I grew up in Brisbane, Queensland, went to Queensland University of Technology. I did an international business degree. I think my parents know this, but I mean, the main reason I did that degree was only because it had international in front of it, because all I ever wanted to do was travel. And, you know, when I was young, 11, 12 year old, people would say, what do you want to be when you're older? And I'd be like, I want to be an expatriate. That was it. I just wanted to travel. I think the bug was in me from my parents. And interestingly, it kind of really drove my decisions around university course. It really drove all my first actions in terms of working as well, because I finished my business degree, which I enjoyed. I got to spend 6 months on a government scholarship in Indonesia as part of that, a Commonwealth government scholarship, which was fantastic. So I got kind of some of that international exposure early on, and I really appreciated that, and actually met kind of two of my best friends through that experience that I'm still really close with to today. And then I left university. And as you mentioned, I went to Canterbury, and that was really a good experience. But really what I was trying to do was kind of save up money so I could head overseas. So pretty much I was only there a year because I bought a one-way ticket to London. You know, I was the kind of the typical Australian maybe who then heads across to Europe to kind of explore the world. However, it was during the October 1997 crash, so the Australian dollar tanked, so I went to a third of what I thought I would have, so that certainly dictated what I did. Following that, and I was always interested in working. I really did look forward to kind of getting out and getting a job. And, always happier, the busier I am, the happier I am. I definitely thrive on that. And I traveled extensively. And then I was very fortunate when I, after traveling, moved to London, that I was working at Prudential UK in London. And at that time, PricewaterhouseCoopers was doing a project with them. And it just happened to be that I was working on the contracting team that was working with PricewaterhouseCoopers. And at that point, they were forming, a lot around their, they'd formed their global capital markets group just kind of a couple of years prior to that. And they were building that up. And so I had the opportunity to join them off the back of the work that I was doing at Prudential. And that was one of those, sliding doors moments, because at that point I was probably going to return to Australia. I'd been overseas a few years at that point, but that opportunity led me to stay in London, and then, led me to, just get the opportunity to travel more, which is really what I loved. I just love traveling. And And then, yeah, so I was with PricewaterhouseCoopers, which was a phenomenal experience. I really enjoyed working there. I worked with amazing people. We were very much project-based. We flew people from all over the world to work on US IPO-related transactions. And you know, during that opportunity, I then moved, after another 5 years in the UK, I moved to Hong Kong and then covered Asia. So I was based out of Hong Kong, spent quite a substantial time in Japan, Korea, China, as well as, you know, substantial time in Switzerland, South Africa, as well as traveling to a lot of other cities. So, so I can definitely say I've ticked that element of traveling for work, traveling for pleasure, through all of those opportunities. And one of the things that I noticed, and this is kind of what fed me into Next Chapter Raise and ultimately into Sophia as well, which are the two companies that I'm founder and co-founders of, it is really, you know, I was really interested in kind of looking at these companies, what was motivating them financially, you know, kind of, you know, we were very gender balanced as an organization, particularly in the Global Capital Markets Group, which was fantastic to see. So it was really great to see, you know, so much diversity and inclusion. And I, you know, as I left PricewaterhouseCoopers, what I was interested in was taking that and exploring that and seeing, well, how can we see greater diversity around the support for female founders, particularly around the financing they receive? Because the statistics are dire in terms of less than 3% of venture capital money goes to female founders, particularly sole female founders. And obviously we can talk about key person risk and all those matters there. But you also see that, you know, there's a, you know, less than 7% of investment decision makers are female as well. So you don't just have a lot of women in the industry. You don't have enough female founders being funded. And so that's what led me to launch Next Chapter Raise. And really that was focused, kind of started as a crowdfunding platform and has really moved into an education and coaching and connecting platform to support women on not just equity, but also different types of financing you can look at. So in addition to crowdfunding, grants, revenue-based financing, and obviously the equity aspect of scaling your business. And I've just worked with a phenomenal amount of women and men in terms of the exposure I've had. And then off the back of that, I met my two co-founders in Sophia because we were all in this space kind of engaged around the gender finance in terms of where I'm asked a lot. I'd like a female investor. I'm asked that a lot, you know, particularly in the angel space. It's like, I'd really like some female angel investors to invest in me. And the fact is that it was, you know, it's still hard to find them in terms of in comparison to finding male angel investors. And so it was through that we all got started talking and launched Sophia, because it really did start. Our first course was, you know, an angel training program. But off the back of that, what we found is a lot of women were asking us also about other types of investment opportunities. So if you look at ETFs, for example, and also, you know, what position do I need to be in to start investing? So we've actually broadened the scope and the remit of Sophia to be much more a broader personal finance education platform for women that services corporates and financial institutions. So very much I'm interested in women and their money, and how do they get more of it? How do they be empowered to feel in control of it and to utilize it to either grow their business or grow their personal wealth?
That's amazing. And you've done quite a few things, but the best part of it all is obviously the travel side. Before I dive into that, I do have to ask, what's one thing about you that nobody would know?
I suppose a lot of people didn't know that, you know, my desire at 11 was to be an expatriate problem. Certainly my family did and some close friends. You know, that was always something that has driven so much of what I've wanted to do.
I love it. I think I might have had the same. I remember my trigger point was I was in international business program as well. The Korean. In I remember my teacher walked in, professor, and he said, I think he introduced himself and he said, I've been to over 70 countries or something. And I was just sitting there. I had only been to like two. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. You can do this. I think that's what kind of opened the door. So it's pretty exciting. And again, that happened later on, but still, I guess once you get the bug, it doesn't disappear. And before I dive into that side, but I really do think that a lot of your global experience, but also your demeanor and the way you're able to carry yourself in business comes from being able to work with all of these different cultures that you have from the African side, Asia. I think it carries a lot of value for how you work inside of a room, how you're working with different groups of people, because everybody has a different way that they're operating, different customs. And I think learning all of those probably makes you obviously a lot more open-minded to how you work with even female founders today. So taking back that type of experience, can you share a few things that you gained from that global side? Like when you first went into taking that one-way plane ticket, obviously your first time probably leaving the country, you're excited for it. You know, what were some of the takeaways that you gained from that? I'm sure today the world's a little bit more global, a little different, but at the time there were some learnings that you probably did take away from it and found your footing as you kind of keep hustling your way forward.
Well, I think at that point, you know, I just finished university and I mean, I'm traveling the other side of the world. So, I mean, you just had to create your own luck, right? In terms of you had to pick up the phone and find that first job in another country far away with very little money behind you at that point, right? You know, I'd spent most of it traveling, anything I'd save. So I think a lot of those early decisions in terms of the work that I did was, you know, you just had to kind of capitalize on the situation you were in. You had to make sure that, you know, back then you did pick up the phone and ring someone and ask them for a job, right? You know, it was like that. But I think later on in kind of working at PricewaterhouseCoopers, what I really valued there was the varied experiences. What it gives you the ability to adapt the way you interact with people, because you'd often have maybe a different partner you're working with, certainly a different client. You know, sometimes your team might change depending on the industry that you were working on a project with. So I think it was really great to get that exposure in terms of always every project was with a lot of different people. So you were always being exposed to having to work out how am I going to work with all these other people, you know, work out people's work styles and kind of adapt around that. You know, you all have to do that. And also you have to deliver, right? So you're learning to adapt and deliver at the same time, because these were quite, you know, fast-paced, high-profile projects we were on. But I think what I also enjoyed taking from that is that kind of some of that corporate experience, exposure to kind of a regulated space, to me was really important when you go out and you're talking to founders who haven't worked in a space that's got a lot of regulations around it, a lot of expectations on behaviors. You know, there's a certain style maybe within the finance industry. And so just being able to bridge some of that with founders was something that I thought was also a value, bringing that across from my time at PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Well, I can imagine when you're in a regulated business and you're starting to learn the ropes, you're certainly going to start to understand how governance is working and how to cover your ass and make sure that things are aligning properly inside of your executable side of it. And you mentioned that, you know, with the key part to that being delivery. How important was delivery to you? And I think you mentioned it that maybe the younger startups have probably less barriers when it comes to governance, but there's also execution. And I think this is highly crucial and probably not talked about enough, that, you know, founders get too busy or they just drop the ball a lot because they're always thinking, chasing maybe the next dollar and not remembering to close the ones that they're working on. You know, is there any advice you can share on that side with helping businesses or people really execute or deliver what they say they're going to do?
Yeah. And I think always with business owners, and, you know, particularly if you're starting your own business, I find so many founders, you know, have so many ideas. And so a little bit is closing that loop to deliver on ideas. So I look at that two ways. First of all, you know, giving it enough time to breathe and not just launch, run, it didn't work the way I wanted it to, let's start something new. So there's kind of, I think, I don't have it, but there's the, kind of this chart where you've started this, stop, start this, stop, start, start, you know, because founders can try a lot of different things, which is good. You are pivoting, you are trying. But then there's, you know, but sometimes things need a little bit of time of iteration, feedback, testing again. So you kind of can't also fall over at the first hurdle. But I do think that as you progress a business, kind of having that decision tree model in there around really putting metrics on, does this make financial sense? I thought we would get, you know, have this happen, this type of KPI. It didn't happen. We'll kind of follow maybe three KPIs or three decision points. If it doesn't work, let's move on. So to me, over time, you need to add some rigor into making the decisions around, is this working or not? You know, versus maybe chasing the next shiny thing, which is very easy to do as a founder, because you have so many ideas on what you can do for and with the business.
So to kind of reiterate on that, it's when you come up with that founder idea syndrome, it's maybe write them down and let them sit for a while. Don't action them all right away. And then maybe go back, and the ones that keep bugging you, then start to look at those ones and put them into a project, and then start to do that ramp up and ramp down. So put it out there, test it, come back, test it again, see where it gets the traction. And if it doesn't, shut it down and kind of work on that next project, but don't over inundate it, and don't just start doing 10 projects at once, because you'll never get them completed.
100%. I mean, focus is key, right? In terms of focus around your time, the money being spent, the just leveraging partnerships, how do you focus that and make the most of that? You know, you can't, the sales targets you're going to go for, that all needs to be focused. There needs to be that laser focus so that you're maximizing effort, money, time to get the quickest result to determine if, yes, this is the right way to go.
I love that. Effort, money, and time. I think we forget about the time part, because especially when you start a company or you're building on it, time seems to be endless, and you've got enough energy to hit it, right?
Well, you do until you don't. And this is, you do meet founders. And also, one of the things that I talk to founders a lot about is valuing your time. And, you know, it's not so much about getting lots of staff and lots of employees, but what can you be outsourcing in an efficient way and cost efficient way that allows you to really focus on where your time is best spent, obviously where your value really sits. And I think very early on, it's harder to do that. And particularly we work with female founders. So many of them are sole founders. So they are doing everything versus having that split a bit more in terms of co-founders. And so it's very much that coaching point around, well, hold up, what's your skill set? What do you need to be doing and focusing on? And, you know, if you're valued at $100 an hour, say, but you're doing some things that could be outsourced to someone for $10 an hour, you know, by utilizing your time better, you might be able to make that sale that kind of is meaningful to the business.
No, I love that. And I guess when you're analyzing the efficiency scale for the founders and where their time fits in, do you put requirements on time and say, look, you know, everything you want to idea search, you know, spend an hour or two, don't do more than that. You're just wasting time. Focus on the business and what you're trying to execute on, because you'll drop the ball if you kind of steered away too much.
Yeah. And I think also, because you can do so many different things as a founder, I think really, tools like time blocking are really important, you know, really managing your calendar tightly so that if you're, you know, if you are going to do some form of sprint, right, in terms of trying to understand what you want to work on, you've really got a process that you work within and you deliver within. Because it can be easy for things to extend out, and you kind of don't want that to be happening, because time goes super fast, right? We're already, mid-March, heading into late March. I don't even know where 2023 has gone. So I'm a big fan of being on top of the control of your calendar, or, you know, if you're going to spend a lot of time with people, making sure that they're people that hit the KPIs you're setting for your business. You know, you can always tie everything back into, there's a reason I'm having this meeting, there's a reason I'm going to meet with that person. I mean, not everything you can tie, but the more you can, I think that leads you into productivity, which comes back to, I think what we all know is the power of no. Because that's feeding into opportunity cost. If you say yes to everything, then there's an opportunity cost around that, right? So the power of no to me is also really important. That took me a very long time to learn. I think I'm still learning it, because I love to do everything, but I do think that's a powerful tool. We can, all of us can always utilize more.
I love it. And how much of this, it sounds like in the way you're kind of interfacing with this, in your career, you did a lot on the early, on the project management side, coordination side. It sounds like the way you're organizing this is you're really saying you need to have some extra skills here, not just because you're a founder, but if you want to be able to be efficient with your time and be able to manage things forward, you should have, and maybe there's two things. I was writing down a couple of things. I'm like, people should be efficient in Excel. They should understand how project management works, because I think these things would really elevate your game as a founder. And if you don't know them, maybe you spend weekends learning them. Like, this could be an extracurricular thing. Is that fair? And is there other skills that you think would be efficient? I don't know. Maybe you can do a PowerPoint course. I don't know if those things are really super needed, but are there things that would really enhance your ability to be a stronger candidate for a successful business?
I think there's so many tools out there now. You know, it's trying to work out what you can use that would maximize the success of your business. So yes, you would talk about like Excel and PowerPoint, but you know, obviously everyone's talking ChatGPT at the moment. You know, there's obviously the Asanas. You know, how are you, you know, what tools are you using to target potential sales? You know, obviously LinkedIn, but there's kind of Sales Navigator. It's a lot of tools out there that you need to explore. And I think talking to other founders is a really good way to work out what other people are using and is good for their business. And learning from them as well. So that's where kind of that connectivity is really powerful to give you insights on what would be useful. I mean, accounting systems, what accounting systems do you have in place to kind of, you know, minimize your time on that? So I think those, and also, you know, if you find yourself writing something regularly, make sure you've just gotten that in a template. So it's just cut and paste, right? Because if you're always writing from scratch, that alone is time consuming.
I like that. And again, you're looking at ways to be certainly more efficient. And so taking yourself back to when you were working in the capital market space, where do you see that really working hugely, I guess, today in Sophia and in your the female-led business side? How do you see that number side really helping? And are you able to kind of share that knowledge to the female founders? And is that something that you find not just female, but all founders lack the understanding of the financial structure, understanding the numbers and how to make money or make their companies make money? Are you seeing that there's any disconnect there when you're working with founders?
Yeah, it's interesting because I find that, you know, one of the big things is around the finances, right? In terms of, you know, understanding their financial statements, looking to their cash flow, and just understanding what levers they can use around it to make business decisions, you know, in terms of, you know, kind of what would drive them to think about getting a loan out, you know, what would be the time frame for that? How much would they need? And you know, also what I find a lot is that founders aren't sure what investors will ask them in terms of the financial aspects of the deal. And so, you know, and I think that's really important is kind of giving that confidence and the opportunity to think about those points, because, you know, it's always driving back into data. And, you know, in terms of growth data, your financial data is always really important when you're looking at fundraising. And so so I think that that's really important. And I feel that that's kind of a growing question we get as a team here at Next Chapter Raise is all around. And I think I've had like three conversations on that this week alone with founders talking about that. So that's 100% true. I think looking at Sophia, because we provide education, we work with a lot of experts in terms of building out our digital courses that we deliver. And but it's really great because we do look at so many different aspects of kind of what you can be doing to improve your financial position. And that's always been something that has motivated me from a young age in terms of financial independence. So it's a real pleasure to be kind of actually the opportunity to be talking about not just like, I mean, we talk budgeting and saving, but introduction to investing and kind of looking at your portfolio and, you know, what are your risk tolerance? What are your financial goals? What are your lifestyle goals? You know, how old are you? You know, kind of what's your family situation? What's your relationship with your partner in terms of communication? communicating on your finances. Is one of you a spender? One of you is a saver? You know, this is all really important once you start looking at your money. And I feel that personal financial, I'm going to say empowerment, is also something that then I think also gives you business, a little bit more business sense or business, contributes to you feeling maybe a bit more confident around your business numbers. However, investment literacy is very different to financial literacy. So we still have that distinction there. And that's why at Next Chapter Raise, we have a number of courses because we run digital courses and boot camps. And part of that includes literally just a course on cash flow statements and learning how to build one and, build scenarios into one.
That's awesome. And I'm assuming this is content that's used for all parties. So anybody that you can line up to get in to have access to that, because I'm sure it's not one-sided on this case. I'm going to go out there and say that it's probably heavily weighted that a lot of people have the same
concerns. And certainly our focus is on female founders at Next Chapter Raise because of the statistics I mentioned earlier around, women, not receiving a lot of funding. And also we work with a great organization called We Connect International, and they help female founders connect to organizations around procurement contracts, just in terms of understanding, how to get onto the list that are open for procurement contracts. So just kind of being a bit of a connector there. And when you talk to them, they explain that, only 1% of global procurement contracts go to female-led businesses. So when you align that with only 3% of funding going to female-led businesses, I mean, there's a real opportunity to look at both of those metrics and understand what can we be doing to improve those. It's quite frightening, actually, those numbers. But so that's why I focus on women. But our courses are very gender neutral, right? I mean, you look at a cash flow statement, it's a cash flow statement. It's not much you can do there. So from that perspective, our courses very much are. And we actually work with a lot of male founders as well. But we certainly market and engage with women more because that's just like the DNA of the business.
That makes sense. I guess to kind of wrap things up on how you guys function and work inside of this space, which it sounds obviously very effective and efficient to help female founders move mm-hmm. to that next stage, get in front of investors. I believe you have also put together a podcast, and yes. I think maybe you could share a little bit about that, because this is another spot where people can line up to learn and hear more about what you're working on.
So our podcast is called Raise the Bar in terms of funding. So we're really interested in that. And what we focus on is interviewing female founders to share their success stories in terms of fundraising. And that could be crowdfunding, that could be getting a loan, that could be, getting some equity investment. So we look at, we want to share role models around women who have scaled and grown their business, because that's one of the things you often hear is, I'd like to hear more stories of women ahead of me. So the podcast really gears towards that. We do it in, interview investors and, key players in the ecosystem that have a lot to contribute around kind of the gender lens investment space as well, because that's kind of, we do try and work with a lot of organizations that have that gender lens investment angle. We talk to women who have sold their businesses. There's some amazing women who after 20, 25 years have sold their businesses, and just listening to their stories around building that business and selling it is also really compelling, right? Because as a business, you have to think about what is your exit, right? What is the end goal here? And so it's also nice to share those stories around where did they go and what are they doing?
I love it. That's awesome. And anywhere you can listen and garner that type of information is invaluable. It's incredible that you're able to get all of these female founders to jump in and share that information. It's awesome because anybody can learn from that. But certainly if the point you made where you want to learn from the people in front of you, it's a great line, because I was working with a couple of founders, and one of them had made a comment to me, and he said, "You're always pitching to the people in front of you, not the people behind you. You've already got the people behind you." And that's has always been in my head, because it's so true that that's pretty much how life works. You're always chasing the people in front of you. So if these people have their success points, you can learn from that. That's going to be pretty valuable for any founder to gain from.
Yeah. And we talked about, you know, you don't know what clicks with someone, right? You don't know what's the story that you hear that really motivates you to do something yourself. So that's what's great, I think, about podcasts, is that, you know, they're very accessible to hear more stories from people out of your own network that have experiences you probably didn't know about or may not get exposed to. So that's why I love listening to and being involved in podcasts.
I love it. Now we're going to jump into some, well, I might say hard hitting questions, but we're going to kind of move into a couple more questions before we get into the rapid fire. So what has been the toughest learning that you've had as a founder, founding investor, like just through that whole network? What has been the toughest lesson that you've had to learn?
I feel like I meet every stereotype as a female founder, to be honest. So I would say there's so many of them. I think the toughest thing, I think, is I always come down to not chasing the shiny object, because my mind explodes with so many ideas for my business, for other people's business. And I think also, when I started out, what I was really looking for was to also build knowledge and find my place in the gender finance world, right? So I was starting a business, but I had probably a broader remit for myself. And so kind of trying to find the balance behind learning and building my knowledge, my profile, understanding why women aren't being funded, you know, what are the challenges? What can we do to that? It's actually quite a big pie, you know. So I think where the one thing that I've learned is, how do I really, just like I was talking earlier, find that focus of where is my time best spent, to both find the personal and kind of knowledge that I'm looking for, but also find the financial returns that comes with building a business.
And I think you kind of hit the spot right there by saying that the financial value that you're going to gain from this. I think a lot of the time we forget that we're in business and you have to survive. And the key is that you can balance that out. You're always trying to figure out what that revenue line is or how that is going to work in order to help you grow and continue on the journey that you're on.
Well, I often talk, when someone does start, you know, what might be called a passion business, I'm not that I'm anti-passion business, but I'm like, if you do not find financial success, you are going to ruin that passion, right? Because, you know, if you go into, you love something, but you pour your heart and soul into it, you pour a lot of money into it, and it doesn't go where you expect it to go, I mean, it can taint what was something that, you know, was such a meaningful part of your life. So for me, it's always about, how do you have that? You know, to me, it's what do I say? It's like passion plus market trends equals success. So you really have to tie them together. You can't have one without the other. Because I think, yes, chase market trends, but if you've got the passion that really drives the ability to execute, keep going, gives you the joy to make it successful, but passion without knowing what's the opportunity, kind of what's the market opportunity, makes it harder to reach that success that will really validate and give you so much back.
Love it. Can't have one without the other.
No.
So I guess now we're going to shift again real quick into, if you could share a case study around, and you work with a lot of founders, just maybe one that really popped in your mind that, you know, and again, you have to be specific on names or anything, but just an experience that you had that really defined what it takes to be a founder.
You know, there's probably two founders that come to mind that I've watched their businesses grow over the past 5 years, and they've received a couple of rounds of funding. But on the face of it, you would think they are an stereotypical business. When you actually talk to them and they talk about their business model, they're very clear on the value around what they're building. And actually they've really got an understanding of what their underlying business model is. And it's not necessarily what they're showcasing to their customers, but the engine behind it is so much more powerful. And what I found with these two particular founders is they have just really nailed that engine part of the business and escalated it to a point that they're really seeing great growth. You know, they're expanding into different countries, they're getting the funding, they're building the customers, and people really support them because they both have an impact element behind them as well. There's a message behind what they're doing in terms of sustainability. And that's, I really like that because I think that they've got a really practical business model behind it. Even though it's, you know, I think when people kind of might interact with their industries, they may not see that, but they are crystal clear on that. And that's what really impresses me is that understanding of what's the engine.
Noted. It's a good line. What's the engine? What's the motivation to get this and where it needs to be and scale it? I love it.
Mm.
All right. We're going to do this new segment. First time, I think we've been working up to it. You've been sharing lots of insight. We're going to jump into the 60-second rant. So I'm going to time it, and you got 60 seconds to rant about anything that you think is worth ranting about. And then I'm going to pop in with my 2 cents, and then you can one-line the rebuttal or not. But we're going to try this out. So give me 1 second. I got to start a timer here. I don't know if I can put it on the screen, but I'm going to start a timer and then we're going to, and I'll wave my hand when we get to the 60 second spot. How's that?
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited for this. Totally different. So
I know, you just like rant about something. I'm not a ranter. It's
very... Well, today you're becoming the first ranter. So this is going to be good. All right, here we go. Ready to go?
Sure.
You're on. Go.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, I think my biggest rant, and I've heard that quite a bit in the past week, we've just come out of International Women's Day, and we've obviously been talking a lot about gender-related matters, is the fact that there aren't many female founders out there. I constantly hear that. I heard someone say that on a panel. It was actually a woman that said it on the panel. And there was an implication. It was the fault of women. And I'm not saying it's the fault of men or the fault of anyone. But the reality is women are out there. They're building great businesses. There's such an untapped opportunity. But they don't necessarily work in the current ecosystem where they're not looking. If I run a pitch event or a mentor event, they come at such a larger pace at mentoring. So for me, I keep telling everyone, you may not see them because they're not coming to your party, but they're over at my party because they like the way that we're doing things. And so such an untapped opportunity and people just don't know it. And that's what I rant about. This is my 5 seconds.
I love it. Done. All right.
Done.
I throw in one stat around this, that 15% of founders are female. So how do you get that number up so that you can increase everything else? If there's only 15% of all founders out there are female, how do we change that dynamic? And how do we get more females wanting to create companies? And is it because, is there issue risk or is the issue financing or is the issue just they don't want to do it? They just don't want to build companies. It's not in their DNA. Over to you.
Yeah, no, I think it's in their DNA. I think it, so there, I don't play a gender role on what's in someone's DNA. I think I do think it's the networking is really important in terms of building a business. It's not just financing, it's finding the right people to talk to get the right advice. I think a lot of founders, female founders, are sole founders. So getting the right advisors around them is critical if they're not going to bring on a co-founder, because you do need someone to bounce ideas. You do need people to talk through, but you don't need to have 10,000 coffee cups to get there, right? Which can often be the case for people. So for me, I think a big factor would be that you know, I think you're talking about growing that. I think if we had a bigger number, giving them the advisory support, I think the role models, I mean, women, anyone wants to see someone that looks like them, that talks like them, maybe that or motivates them in a way that says, yes, I want to do that. That's interesting to me. So I think that's really important. I think greater value around that a business can make impact and make money is really important, because so many women start businesses that have an impact play. And that doesn't mean they can't be financially successful and financially viable, but historically there's been, I think, more concern if it's something that is focused on sustainability or kind of falls under that impact type. But I think that, you know, we've got a great understanding of ESG. We're looking at the UN SDG goals. You know, there's greater money being put to that. And I think that can also help, because women do want to make impact, I think, around their own families, their communities, the people they work for, and solving problems that really are impacting them. So to me, that would be a great way to increase numbers. And once you increase it, giving them greater networks and support.
And I love money. It.
Good.
Yeah. I love it. Well said. That's my favorite segment of all time now. So I'm going to push this rapid fire discussion, the 60-second rant. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out some more stats for you just quickly. The highest percentage of female founders in global context, where there's more women that start companies, is number one is Ghana, Russia, Uganda, New Zealand, and they all hit around the 30 to 40% of all females are running and operating a company. I think that's brilliant. And I'm sure we could get into why it is there, but it's also survival and driven. And when you get put into that spot, it makes it happen. And in those countries, there is a lot of women led, need to crush it. I need to survive. And this is the only way I'm going to do it. And they go out and push the line, and it's amazing. So I think those stats really do prove that if you can go into the hardest countries, and those countries are amazing, by the way, beautiful people, you can switch that in and make it benefit for yourselves as well.
Yeah, I think there you're talking about needs versus opportunity-based, the kind of necessity versus opportunity-based businesses. And, you know, there was a stat that came out pre-COVID from one of the banks. And I'm going to quote 160 million female entrepreneurs. I think that was Asia. I don't think it was purely Southeast Asia, but the number was big. But the reality is a lot of that is necessity-based entrepreneurs, right? Like you've kind of, you know, that's kind of building that day-to-day living, you know, supporting the family, et cetera. So you definitely see a lot of that. So I think that's why you do see big numbers, and that's a good thing, right? I mean, you know, people are out there, they're earning, they're supporting their families. I think that's great.
Love it. Love it. All right. We're going to jump into rapid fire questions.
Sure.
Business side first. So you are going to pick one versus the other coming in as the lead investor. Okay. Founder or co-founder?
So, sorry, your question is, would I choose a founder or a co-founder as a lead investor? Okay.
If you're going to invest, which one, like, meaning you're already working with them to help
them. Yeah. So no, I mean, I have to, obviously, a co-founder in there is just an easier play. Can always be problems with co-founders though. So I sit on the fence a lot of this because of the female founder angle. I know so many are sole founders. So that's a tough one for me, actually.
Okay. Unicorn or a four-year 10X exit?
Unicorn.
Tech or CPG?
Tech.
NFTs or Web 3.0?
I'm going to say Web 3.0. I'm an amazing WhatsApp group at the moment talking all about that. So just learning. I'm just learning so much. My son AI would say NFTs. He loves NFTs. He's only young, so.
I was going to say that they just put a release out that the ape NFTs are tanking. And I'm pretty sure Snoop Dogg and what's the other guy that was pushing these? The wine guy. Oh, man, what's his name? Gary Vee. I'm sure they made their millions and billions, so they're good. But they're tanking now.
Everyone else is right. Yeah. You got to be first.
Exactly. AI or blockchain?
Oh God, both. Right. You know, we're talking the future here.
Agreed. First time founder or second, third time founder?
Second or third.
First money in or Series A?
For me, actually, first money in, because that's what women need.
Okay. Verticals, do you have a focus? Where you guys operate out of?
No.
Okay. Two qualities a startup needs in order to stand out to you.
I always come back to focus. You know, and I think kind of how to find your market and talk to them and sell.
Okay. What is the piece of advice you give founders 9 out of 10 times?
Given I'm like Nike and I tell everyone, just do it, would be something I say a lot to people.
Okay. Do you have a philosophy or rules that you stand behind?
You build something good, you know, kind of, you know, what, and for me, the philosophy is what do you want from your business and work to that. So do you want the unicorn? Do you want the zebra? I just recently heard the donkey. I'm not sure what that one was, but I mean, what do you want? Right. Because then that's when you look at the financing you need. That's when you look at the scale you need. Don't work towards what you think you should be doing. Work towards what you want. But again, I come back to just start, because you can get in and work out, you know, once you start as well, don't hesitate. Just start and get in there and have a go.
I love that. That's a great line and quote. Brilliant. What tech will define the world in 5 years from now?
I mean, I presume AI will be, you know, a big driver given, I mean, ChatGPT has had so many downloads in such a small, you know, amount of time, and it's really already started to transform the way businesses are working, the way they're resourcing, the way they're, you know, they're costing things out, you know, and obviously the great impact it has on education and many other things. So so right now, that's what I would say we should expect to see more.
Okay. Who is your hero, mentor, and why?
I have to say, I don't have one person in particular, because I get to meet awesome people all the time. And I think I'm always taking something from people. So, you know, I just, and that's what I love about not being in corporate anymore, is every day of every week, I get to meet people in different industries doing different things at different stages and hear their why. And I get to talk to a lot of amazing investors as well, and people kind of trying to make impact in the gender lens space. So I feel like I'm often just, you know, I'm always in awe of people, to be honest. So and I love that, right? So I try and take a bit from everyone, I suppose, when I can.
I love it. And I totally agree with that, that in the space that you operate in, you're going to come across a lot of fantastic people and founders and figure out what they're doing, why they're doing it. And even if you can't work with them, you still can be part of that journey for that split second and just enjoy what they're doing.
Mm, yeah.
Okay, we're going to do 3 random questions.
Sure.
What is your biggest fear or phobia in the business startup ecosystem?
For me personally or for the ecosystem? Sorry.
For you personally, yeah. What is your biggest fear and phobia in the startup ecosystem? What scares you about it?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's always about maybe not being taken seriously, you know, in terms of what our focus is on. You know, you can throw statistics around like I've done, but then some people go, it's not really a problem. So I think it's always, you know, it's just sometimes talking about this, and the continual discussion having on this, because it needs to be had. So it's not so much a fear or phobia, but it's a challenge, you know, always.
Agreed. I can see how that can over time call it the imposter syndrome at some point, but you kind of feel like you're not being listened to, even though the more you hear it and the more that people talk about it everywhere, it's increasing every day. The number of female founders are coming. Mm-hmm. It's growing every month, every day. So it's as much as you may not think it's working, it's working.
Yeah, it's good.
What line do you find you share to investors over and over?
With investors.
Invest in these guys. They're amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I just am like, I feel like I'm often, because I meet so many founders. I mean, if we chat next week, I mean, I just met the most amazing woman out of Vietnam literally 2 weeks ago. So I'm definitely always talking about amazing founders I always meet. Obviously, I'm always trying to make sure they're relevant to people, but I'm definitely someone who has always just met someone who is growing. And I think what I keep saying is I'm meeting founders that are raising bigger and bigger amounts, right? In terms of when we started 5-6 years ago, it very much more of that ideation stage, very early stage. But now what I'm seeing is they're looking very much like bigger numbers, and they're coming in and they're saying in 18 months, I'm going to fund again. And so this, so I just see that. So that's what I do keep saying is the quality of the founders I'm seeing and the numbers they're raising continue to keep going up. And that's awesome.
I love it. Okay, this is a more off the cuff. Why are we so fascinated by rich people? Are they smarter than us?
Well, I just saw actually an article yesterday said, this whole concept of money doesn't buy you happiness isn't true. Actually, rich people are happier. so maybe that's it, right? I think everyone feels attaining either the nice car, the nice house, maybe that yacht is going to make you happy, and maybe it will. you never know.
I guess the possibilities are there. All right, we're getting close to the end. We're going to jump into the rapid fire personal questions.
Okay.
Most famous person that pops in your mind?
Sam Neill, because I was just chatting to someone how I spotted him in Hong Kong. And actually, I think, just Sam Neill. So I was just talking about him this week.
I love it. First brand that pops in your mind?
I'm going to say Fenty, because I've just seen so much with, Rihanna and what she's been doing in terms of, I just was watching a movie recently and they were talking about Fenty in that. I'm like, this is so much great product placement.
Okay. You prefer a book or a movie?
Books.
Wonder Woman or Robin?
Wonder Woman.
I don't know why I use Robin, but I had to be the opposite of Batman. So
yeah.
I'm just assuming Robin goes that way. I don't know. But anyways, fortune cookie or birthday cake?
My fortune cookie. Absolutely.
5 minutes with Bezos or Oprah?
Oprah.
Mountain or beach?
Beach.
Bike or run?
Bike.
Big Mac or Chicken McNuggets?
neither, but we'll go with a Big Mac. I have to answer. All right.
Trophy or money?
Probably money.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
TED Talk or book reading?
Book reading.
TikTok or Instagram?
Instagram.
Facebook or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn.
Favorite movie and what character would you play?
I've just finished watching the second Black Panther movie. So the princess, I think she's a phenomenal character, actually. I think, yeah.
I like it. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to have to watch that one. Favorite book?
I read a lot, so there's a lot. Because my son's reading Harry Potter, so I'm reading that with him at the moment. I'm really enjoying that. So I have to say right now, I'm halfway through the series again. It's great.
I love it. Favorite sports team?
I have to support my family, Brisbane Lions in Queensland.
Awesome. All right, well. There's, I guess, one last question. What is your superpower?
Networking, talking to people. I love meeting people, talking to people, connecting people. So that's definitely, a superpower.
I love it. I'll also throw in one extra is that you're very good at communicating and building comfort levels. So I think that allows for your networking and everything else to be very efficient or very good.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So to end our show and want to say thank you very much for joining us today, Nicole. It was fantastic. I really enjoyed the conversation. Lots of information. I took lots of notes. And the way we kind of like to end our show is we like to give you the last word, and we want to share to the community, to investors, to founders, anything that you think will help them move forward. But again, I want to thank you for joining us today, and look forward to chatting with you again in the future. But I turn it over to you.
Well, thank you. This has been great. Thank you for the time, the questions, the opportunity. When we work with female founders, we're always just, get out there, network, talk to people, and be convinced about what you're building. That's the big thing. It's not about confidence, about conviction that what you're building is going to be the best thing out there, because I think that's definitely what investors want to hear. Always talking to investors around, there are amazing female-led businesses out there, and there will be more. So if you want to connect with them, engage with them, mentor them, we run pitch events, judge it, we do so much with them. But if you want to kind of be part of our network and meet other great investors working with female founders and meet female founders, then we're the place to be.
I love it. And how can people get a hold of you?
So if you go to nextchapterraise.com or onto my LinkedIn, absolutely reach out to me.
I love it. Thank you, Nicole, for being a rock star. You're amazing. Enjoy the conversation again. Thank you very much and have a fantastic week ahead.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay. That was a great discussion with Nicole. We went into so many great little areas there, but I think some of the key takeaways, certainly on the founder side is, creating goals, goal setting, work on sprints. So learn what that whole project side is and how you're going to execute, iterate, get rid of it, fail. Like there's lots of different ways in order to operate when you're coming up with all of these ideas. She talked a lot about this, but the number one thing was focus. I think that is a really key to anything you're going to do. And then the other great thing she talked about is just setting up different systems to validate, execute, having an impact business. Those are all great things. And of course, the big one was, passion with the engine. What's the engine? What's the why? What are you doing this for? What are you going to get out of it? How's the financial side going to work for you? And that's what's really going to drive your business home. So her great line was, what do you want from your business? Then look at it and work towards what you want. What is the outcome that you're looking for? And then work towards that. So great goal setting, great line, very helpful. Doing a lot in the female founder side to help female founders raise funds and build scalable businesses, which is fantastic. So thank you again for joining us, Nicole, and everybody else. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please feel free to share with your friends, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and or please follow us on Spotify, Apple, and or Stitcher podcast platforms. Feel free to share an audio or video clip around our show, and we may include it in one of our future podcasts. You can find or follow us at marketing@openpeoplenetwork.com or on LinkedIn at Supporters Fund. Your support and comments are truly appreciated. Please visit us at supportersfund.com or for startup events at openpeoplenetwork.com. Thank you and have a fantastic day.